My name is Evan White, and you're listening to the Stories on Stage Davis podcast. There's been a lot of talk about how our country might start to move forward now that the presidential election is over and the future is a little clearer. Ours is not a political series, but one thing we do believe in is sharing stories. They are how people have come together despite differences, and they have the power to show us how alike we are. I will say that Stories on Stage Davis remains committed to our little corner of the cultural landscape, and to presenting stories that move or surprise, that are funny or poignant or suspenseful, or sometimes all of the above. Ours is a small piece of what makes our culture colorful and vibrant, but it's a special one, and we're glad to have you share it with us. In this week's episode, we're presenting the story Afternoon by Lisa Locascio, whose work has appeared in The Believer, Tin House, N Plus One, Book Forum, and many others. She is core faculty in the Antioch University Los Angeles MFA program and the executive director of the Mendocino Coast Writers Conference. Reading Afternoon is returning Stories on Stage Davis actor Annalisa Langford Clark, who has been involved in the Sacramento area theater community for nearly 20 years. Stay tuned after the reading to hear Lisa Locascio on the inspiration behind her story. But first, here's Annalisa Langford Clark reading Afternoon.
Afternoon by Lisa Locascio. On the day of the party, Jack and Stella finished all of their chores and errands by noon, so they got cheeseburgers and went home to get stoned. In the living room of their basement apartment, Stella packed the pipe with the strain of marijuana called Hell of a Heaven, while Jack collected accoutrements in the kitchen, plates, knives, forks, glasses, two of each, the large bottle of corn syrup-free ketchup, thick stacks of paper napkins, and the pitcher that filtered water as it poured. Hell of a Heaven came in a small plastic bottle like the canisters in which Jack and Stella's parents had once kept their film negatives, although those canisters had been matte black with a gray lid, and this one was a translucent violet. Stella's fingers kept slipping on the dried leaves as she tried to pinch another nug into tiny pieces. When other people did this, they always had some little device that made it easier. A round thing that screwed together and ground the weed into dust. Jack chopped up the marijuana with their fish knife on a cutting board when it was his turn to pack the bowl. But Stella preferred to use her hands. Pinkish sunlight throbbed petulantly around the edges of the three windows set into the wall that faced the backyard, a gray patch where they sometimes smoked outside at night. As soon as they got home, Jack pulled the curtains. Now he arranged the items he had brought in from the kitchen on the low coffee table and turned to the window, trying to force the fabric to blot out the sneaky extra light. "I wish we could make it so no light got through," he said, "so it was totally dark." "I don't," Stella said, scraping little bits of plant off her finger with her thumbnails. She tried to push the plant bits into the pipe, but they mostly fell on the floor. "I like light. It depresses me to pull the curtains during the day." Jack's shoulders slumped. He dropped his hands to his side. "Do you not want to get high and relax with something on TV?" he asked the floor, "after working so hard all week?" Stella sealed the canister of Hell of a Heaven. "No, of course I do," she said quickly. "I don't know that I want to anymore," Jack said, staring at the brown curtains. "It's not fun if I know you don't like it."
"I do like it," Stella said. "I do, Scout." It was one of the ways that they were nice to each other. Jack called Stella Lacey because she had told him early on that as a little girl, she had thought lace was the most beautiful thing in the world and cultivated it into all of her effects. Parasols, gloves, the bolero over her confirmation dress. Then later, her mother told her that lace was created to look like pubic hair. And Lacey became what she wanted to be. Sexy, like a princess. When they got married, she had worn enough lace to cover her body 5 times over. Stella called Jack Scout because he had made Eagle Scout by rehabbing the septic system of a remote shelter for abused women and their children in the high eastern Oregon desert where he had grown up. A project she had learned about on their first date, just moments before she had decided that they would be married. They had been 23 on that day. Her hair was bobbed and dyed bright red. He wore a green button-down shirt printed with silver paisleys. They went together to an island on a ferry that cost only $1. Once she was stoned, Stella didn't care so much about the curtains, and she was happy to see Jack relax. The food disappeared quickly. Without speaking, she got up, floated into the narrow kitchen behind them to refill the water pitcher from the kitchen faucet, and floated back to the couch, feeling pleasantly immaterial. Jack didn't turn. When they watched TV together, he took on a contemplative, focused expression, like a detective working out a case on one of their favorite crime dramas. A pensive, studied attention, somehow both alert and relaxed. Over the course of a given evening in front of the television, his features settled into a gaze of sleepier and sleepier analysis until finally Stella felt Jack's muscles slacken beside her as he lost consciousness. Unless, of course, she fell asleep first. At the commercial break, he reached over and patted her hand, saying, "Lacey," in a tone of encouragement. Marijuana helped Stella in all kinds of ways. It made her genuinely hungry and rendered the experience of eating glorious. It heightened her ability to invoke the early stages of orgasm by doing Kegel exercises on her end of the couch and remembering. It smoothed ambiguity and fear. When she was sober, for example, she sometimes worried that her correspondence with Paul was inappropriate, a kind of vague infidelity. But stoned, she was confident that Paul was in fact the good and caring friend she believed him to be, an offbeat but critical element of her unusual artistic life. She liked to test the marijuana's boundaries by directing her mind to something worrying just before smoking and then revisiting it once stoned to see how she felt about it after the drug had taken effect. The episode they were watching ended. Stella stretched her legs straight out in front of her. In the kitchen, they had a whole canister of the chocolate tea biscuits she liked. There was a documentary she wanted to watch. Jack looked nobly handsome at his distant end of the couch. This was great. This was fine. She felt good. She felt alive. "Scout, do you want to watch the new movie about seals?" He leaned his head back in an exaggerated yawn. "It sounds so boring. Can we watch Hat Hour?" Stella loved intelligence, revered it as a benevolent and reliable deity, a quality that could order the universe if she let it. Jack was the smartest man she had ever met, had taught himself Polish, had been a chess champion once, had earned dual degrees in philosophy and math at a college famous for its high rate of student suicide, and graduated alive. And so she had married him. But despite his intellectual bona fides, his fine education and great taste in literature, his ability to explain any idea to her with a total clarity she had never found in the communication of another person, Jack had a tremendous love for trash. In large part, it was fine, because through Jack, Stella had discovered her own long-buried love for trash. In her case, reality television shows charting the largely false minutiae of friendships between wealthy women, with their squawking soundtracks and indefatigable vulgarities, these ugly programs spread a shimmering relaxation over her body, worked out the knots that built in her shoulders from hunching over as she graded papers. Stella was grateful to Jack for indulging and even encouraging her love of them. For her 30th birthday, he had somehow procured a baseball cap made to adorn the crew of Wives' Lives, a gift so thoughtful and unlikely it brought tears to her eyes when she opened it. And yet, she could hardly stand the trash he needed to survive his days. Saccharine romantic comedies in which preternaturally sweet and unique heroines won over abashedly grumpy men. Which half of these turgid romances, Stella wondered, did Jack identify with? He wouldn't tell her. Stella looked at her husband, spending 2 hours consuming the tale of a milliner's daughter finding the grit to rescue her family store and win over a taciturn accountant, sounded almost as appealing as returning to campus and teaching for another 6 hours. But she saw Jack's hopeful eyes and remembered his tentativeness around the marijuana, the way it had hurt him, her hesitation. "Scout," she said, "I can't think of anything I would rather do than watch Hat Hour with you." "Lovely jubbly," he said then, and busied himself setting it up. She tapped a fat joint out of its plastic test tube, lit it as Jack brought the cookies from the kitchen. The package was empty before the credits ended. The film held Jack's attention completely, and Stella's not at all. So she propped her left knee to shield her crotch and turned to her phone behind it, resisting and then giving in to review her most recent exchange with Paul, whose contact was stored under the name Margaret O. Text from Margaret O. "You must realize that you are a creature of unusual sensitivity and sophistication. The incredible refinement of your person and all that crackling wit and vinegar in you makes it difficult for others. They envy and fear you, but also desperately want your approval. Stella." "Really? What?" Margaret O. "Take it from me, the truth. I wouldn't lie to you and get myself in trouble." Margaret O. "And then you're so stunning on top of it. Oh, brother." Stella. "I feel like people are mad at me a lot, like they resent me." Margaret O. "Well, now, beautiful girl, many people feel small next to you. That's a fact. And plenty want you more than they can stand. Not that too many will ever look that in the face. Some overlap between the two, a Venn diagram, you remember those? But the ones who can stand next to your tsunami without fear feel just warm and lucky. Those are the people to seek out." Stella. "I know, I do. I feel really lucky to have found you." Margaret O. Exclamation point. Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Margaret O. "Dear. You are dear." Margaret O. "I am thinking of your sweet desire for others to know your kind self. They will. So many admire you already. You are pure water." Margaret O. "Be back in a bit. You returns from HH dance and dinner is afoot." The exchange had taken place over the course of a few hours 3 days ago. She had received the last in the evening after Jack had already fallen asleep beside her. It was an hour later where Paul was, due east, late for his daughter Ursula's hip-hop class to end, she had thought. But their talks were like that. A man with 4 children and a wife could be called away at any time. Stella was proud of her relationship with Paul. In him, she felt she had found a soul friend, someone who understood her, with whom she could discuss her frailest thoughts, the ones that worried and upset Jack. Stella was the powerfully rooted tree from which Jack hung his rope swing, the ballast that enabled him to sail straight. Jack had told her as much in their wedding vows. It wasn't his fault that he couldn't be hers. She read the text from Paul again, checking Jack in her peripheral vision. He was utterly given over to the movie. Stella pushed the bad feeling the elapsed time gave her down into her stomach. Paul would get back to her soon. He was just a busy man, one who always made time for her. She knew she was writing some kind of line with him, or maybe all the way over it. But her life was so much fuller with Paul in it. The hours of dance-like feeling his sage and loving words gave her. The way he saw her glimmering and indomitable, worthy. His utterly unexpected veneration had become a sun and water in her life. They had known one another a full year now, she realized with warm gratitude. Met at a pedagogical conference in Grand Rapids, where they had been seated together at an otherwise empty table for an interminable awards dinner at which neither was honored. Paul was not the kind of man to whom Stella was ordinarily or had ever been attracted. 30 years her senior, he was sturdily built, nearly exactly her height. 1 inch taller, he insisted, which she found charming. With long silver hair, he wore in a plait down his back. He wore cowboy boots and, with little coaxing, admitted a reverent self-mythoposis touching on his family, beloved children, deceased troubled parents, extant but never spoken of wife, early experiences, something in Saskatchewan, the Coast Guard, students, geniuses rapt by his generosity all, and other passions, wine, amateur shoemaking, prairies. All her young life, Stella had been compelled by tall, wan, sad-eyed boys who wanted oblivion and succor and had wanted to drink in red-lit bars with them and cradle their heads in her lap, smudge their tears against the pad of her thumb, lift it to her mouth to taste. That was what she knew desire to be, the winsome swoon of wanting to make someone feel better. She liked to give what she had always wanted to receive, a curated type of nurturing that left her boys feeling like brand new school children, bathed and put to bed at an appropriate hour, held tight, tucked firmly in, and allowed to keep the light on. But with Paul, she felt something new, a nascent type of desire that crystallized only several months into their never-ending conversations, shocking her. There was something lurid and dirty in wanting to swaddle Paul's gut. She imagined it, a hardened leather dome beneath chest fuzzies matched to the braid, and let him suckle on her dangling teats. For him and her fantasies, her breasts became sagging dugs, ready, or perhaps overripe for an infant, dried out, used up, like her. Like she would be, but he would still want her, bleat for it like a lamb, like a little baby boy. Let him worship her harder, give her more. Let her feed him rude and hard under her, beneath her. Let him denigrate and consecrate her, his never-spoken lust simmering just below the surface, in a tall and indomitable flume. They texted about books and dreams and funny happenings and assholes at the coffee shop and sent each other pictures of all of these things, but also of their faces and occasionally her body. And she felt no shame about any of it, none at all, she was sure. To keep safe, Stella dropped harmless details about Paul into conversation with Jack, who remarked sympathetically that he sounded like a good guy. He was glad she had found someone in her field to mentor her. He reserved his hope solely for her work now. Jack's office management job required a 2-hour daily commute and was such a total repudiation of his youthful ambitions that he had structured their life around total forgetting whenever he was not at work. The marijuana, the entertainment, the snacks, and the increasingly early bedtime. Stella had never slept so much in her life. Sometimes they lay down to read before dusk was over. It was good for her, she thought. Stella worked 4 adjunct jobs and needed her rest. Sometimes she argued with Jack and told him that life had more in store, urged him to keep going, apply for new jobs, do a hiking meetup, get a bike. But she didn't like to argue, at least not Jack's way. His special talent for setting the room red with his breaths and the silence in between, withholding their secret language and pet names. Letting Stella figure out for herself how much she really wanted to be right. There, now Jack laughed until he wheezed at something on the screen. Stella hastily typed a message to Paul, holding the phone so that it looked casual, so that she could put it down at any moment. Text from Stella. I'm watching the latest rom-com Nightmare and wondering how these things get made. Do people like them? A simpering woman, a disciplinarian man from whom affection must be coaxed. Ugh. Who wants to fantasize about that? I feel ill fit to the world sometimes, really. Except when I talk to you. Too many cookies. I think I'll have sugar tummy. Class went well today. Maybe going to dye my hair soon. Thinking about you and wishing you a wonderful day. Remind me to tell you about my new dress. Sometimes he was right there when she texted and would write back. This was not one of those times. Sugar tummy was what she and Jack called it when stoned they ate so many sweets that they were sick in the morning. The movie ended incomprehensibly, even after Stella forced herself to shove her phone between the couch cushion and the armrest and train her eyes on the screen she couldn't make herself follow. The articulation of the offense she took at it was basically the thesis statement of the complaint every man she had ever loved had eventually come up with, that she was a snob, a scold, a harridan who couldn't let people have their idiotic, dopey fun of dog-like submission to the worn-out, soppy old ideas of patriarchal capitalism. She was an effete slut for whom everything had to be complex and dark and meaningful. Once she and Jack had gone to see an action movie on opening night, and Stella had had a good time there in the dark, laughing alone, whispering to Jack about plot contrivances until he turned and said to her with unexpected vehemence, "I'm enjoying this, okay? I like this kind of movie." Stella had been stunned. She believed them to share an acid sense of humor, but when Jack wanted to be comforted, the acid departed. Then he, like almost everyone else Stella had ever known, required niceness, wanted calm, a restful evening at home, time to unwind. How unwound could one person be, she sometimes wondered, before they became completely undone. That was a cute movie, Stella said, stopping Hat Hour's final credits and returning them to the main menu. She remembered with horror that those were the exact words that the vapid cheerleader had spoken during the hospital visit to the recently paralyzed quarterback on the small-town football drama of which she and Jack had watched every episode, in a scene that epitomized the girl's vacant failure to apprehend the severity of her high school honey's fate. It wasn't, on the whole, a great idea for a person with Stella's stingingly clear memory to watch as much TV as she did. Want to watch the seal one now? Jack yawned exaggeratedly. She averted her eyes from his open mouth and looked at the gold splotches on the wall behind him. Why was he so tired? He hadn't had to work today. It was still so early, not even 4 o'clock yet. The sun fighting its way in against the margins of the window. Maybe you stay up and watch it, Lacey, he said. I'm just so beat. No, Stella wanted to yelp. I'm the one who got up at 5 to grade papers before I taught my morning weekend class. It's 3 goddamn o'clock. Look alive. But she had gotten good at squelching yelps, stopping them before they got to her mouth. And she wanted to be able to go to the party that night. Wanted them to go together. It's okay, she said. We'll watch it some other time. She turned off the TV, trying not to seem petulant. Thankfully, Jack didn't seem to register any of it. He put on a cozy voice. Do you want to just maybe go lie down in the bedroom? Just for a little bit? He stretched towards her like vines. Stella scrutinized her husband's face. If you were a sitcom husband, this would be a come on. But Jack genuinely wanted to sleep. To go to bed in the middle of the day. Her hands nearly flew up. So badly did she want to wrench open the curtains, the door, let in the air, run outside, smear her face with all the makeup she had, and go to a bar and drink until she didn't know her name. Let anything at all happen to her. She smiled, said, "That sounds nice," and followed him to the bedroom. Here, too, he carefully drew the blinds flat against the window. "Still so bright," Jack muttered, taking off his clothes without ceremony, tossing his pants and shirt into the hamper as if he was done for the day. A gentle, friendly nausea kept Stella upright, making her husband's body a pale rectangle, a blank known space. She placed her phone on the bedside table, screen down, disrobed, threw back the covers. Being close to Jack like this still made her senses flare. Each rejection had made the specifics of his body more painful to consider. But she still liked his smell, his nearness. His was the body with which she spent the most time, even if she was circumscribed in the range of acceptable actions she could make upon it. She nuzzled into his shoulder, closed her arm around his chest, pushed against him to feel the slack hang of his penis on her thigh. It was hot and sticky under the covers in the bright afternoon. As soon as he was asleep, Jack's body produced a quarter erection, which she snuggled determinedly against. She shifted her arm so that her breast lay on his arm, and she closed her eyes and thought of cameras and men with cameras and of a man making love to her while another filmed and of a place where there was only a man and only his desire to put his mouth on hers. And she thought of being with 2 men, 3, and taking drugs with them, drugs she had never done, just as she had never done it with more than one man, cocaine, meth even, things that would make her crazy and rough, dangerous things, just as she was a dangerous girl, something meaningless and small, so little it hardly existed, that it was hardly real at all. It. She was an it. She did not exist. And what if that it were to receive Paul's silver hair across its face like a whip? What if she were hurt like that? What if he took it out of the braid for her? What if it was silky like a cat's tail? What if it were rough like leather? What if he shamed her like that? If he forced her down, What are you doing? Stella's hands flew from between her legs. She went rigid. She couldn't think, couldn't look at him. No. Jack rolled over, not pretending to believe her, gave a grandiose sigh. Ugh, okay, I'm trying to rest. Couldn't see his face. Why wouldn't he show her his face? She couldn't stop the tears stupid as they were, as she was. At least she had learned how to make them quiet. "Get some sleep, Scout," she whispered to his back. "I'm just going to read a little bit." In response, he moved further away from her. Fractured light spread against the far wall. She felt the weight of the ceiling on her body. A useless thing, her useless thing. No. The useless thing was her. I. Useless, she thought, and cracked herself up, right up to the edge. Okay. Okay. What time was it? It probably 5 now, maybe 5:30 if she was lucky. Maybe the day was rushing by. They tended to if she could lose track. That meant they only had 2 hours to spend before she could busy herself getting ready for the party. Smoke another joint, play some music, and spend 30 minutes, 40 minutes painting her face, arranging her hair, picking out an outfit. Jack could sleep the whole time, and then how could he be too tired to go to the party? She would wake him up all ready to go, and he'd have to rally. How lucky were they to have a whole day to rest like that? She had a pretty blue dress. She had a pretty green dress. A red crop top she had sent a photo of herself in to Paul. "A true flame," he had replied. To Stella, her bed was a spaceship, and she was out there in the firmament, floating in the dark. And it was cold. And she wondered if she would ever land. Everyone only had so long to be alive, and she was on a clock. She was ticking down. Now that she was over 30, she understood, as she hadn't before, that everyone had the right to do as they liked with that clock, with that time. She knew that. That was good and right. If Jack wanted to sleep his days away, she was no one to blame him. She understood. The bed was soft and warm, but in it she was frozen, coated in space dust, wondering what would happen between now and her final breath, and how she would become anything that mattered by the time she died. She had made a pledge, a vow, and it was hers to carry and live out if she was worth anything at all. Deep breaths. It's okay. Breathe the yoga way, not the scared way. Okay. Okay. She pinched her eyes tight against the tears, and when she knew she'd won, squeezed them back down. She let herself lift her phone from the table. She had turned off all the alerts, but when she went into her text, she saw that Paul had written her. Oh, her hero. He saved her. A gallant man, a crusader for her heart. Fearless. When she was down at the bottom, he sent the submarine and brought her right back up. Text from Margaret O. Busy, busy here. Boy on base, a dinner party. Later, Kyle's game. Going to have a lot going on next few days. Thinking about pulling back from screen life. Getting outside more. Have a great Saturday with your movie. Stella had not gotten where she was in life by flying off the handle. You couldn't expect other people to solve your problems, of course. And it was a nice message, nice of him to write her. She wished she were the kind of person who could whip her phone at the wall, break it, break everything on it, stand on the bed next to Jack's body, douse him with lighter fluid, find a match. Who's Margaret O? She blacked her phone screen and slid the hand holding it tight against the opposite side of her body under the covers. Turned to look at Jack's face. His furry eyebrows. Once, long ago, she had licked one, called it his kitty cat. A lady from work. Stella had 4 jobs, and none of them involved co-workers. But Jack didn't press. He stared at the ceiling, didn't respond. She turned towards him and willed herself soft. "Are you almost ready to start getting ready for the party, Scout?" He moved his head so that they saw each other dead on, their features mirrored, each set an abyss in which the other sought their fate. Jack and Stella looked and looked for longer, it seemed, than ever before, than anyone ever had ever before. This was it. She knew. The moment after which everything would get better. Jack wiped his face down the middle, one left-handed stripe. Then he showed himself to her again, skin shadowed with rosettes from the dimming sun still making its way in. So close that Stella kept forgetting that they were separate people. Two bodies in space. His mouth seized, tried to right itself, failed, pried itself open. What party?
This is Lisa Lacascio, and you've just heard my story, Afternoon. I began this story many years before I finished it, sometime in 2015, and it is an autobiographical story, although the details of my life are different from those of the characters in the story. I wanted to write a story that captured the languor and claustrophobia of a certain type of Los Angeles afternoon when the blinds are drawn against the bright sun and there seems to be no possibility of another way of leading one's life. I have empathy for both of the characters in the story. I understand why they make the decisions they do and how desperately they want to be free. And yet at the same time, how it is those same decisions and same inabilities to act that will lead them to do further harm to themselves and to one another. It has often been said of my work that I write about being in a relationship with an extremely depressed person, and I acknowledge that this is a theme that has recurred in my fiction. But I'd also like to draw your attention to the way that there is a beauty and meaning to the characters' dogged desire to lead lives on their own terms. And even if those lives are full of emotional violence and missteps, they are their own. Thank you for listening to my story. I hope you enjoyed it.
You've just heard Afternoon by Lisa Lacascio, read by Annalisa Langford-Clark. The Stories on Stage Davis podcast will be back on Saturday, November 28th, with a story by David E. Yee, whose work has appeared in American Short Fiction, AGNI Online, Seneca Review, Gulf Coast Online, and elsewhere. In the meantime, we hope you have a very happy and safe Thanksgiving, and that you'll tune in later this month for David's story. The Stories on Stage Davis podcast is a sponsored project of YOLO Arts, a nonprofit arts organization, and supported in part by a grant from the City of Davis Arts and Cultural Affairs Program. Find upcoming episodes, view our archive of past episodes, and help support our series at storiesonstagedavis.com.